No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show that will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. And if you have a great question for Jim Bubar, our guest tonight, who I will introduce in a minute, or for me, you can call in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype it to us. Tonight, we have an old friend and a great guy, Jim Bubar. Jim is a three-time elected delegate to three Democratic National Conventions, a D.C. Alternative National Committee man, twice elected as D.C.'s representative of the DNC Platform Committee, co-chairs the D.C. Democratic Party Statehood Committee, and is a voter protection lead, and he's one of the first people I ever met when I did this job. Jim, welcome to the show. Back to the show. You've been on before.
Well, thanks, Michael, and it's an honor to be invited to be on your show. Do you recall the last time I was on your show was at the Philadelphia, the Democratic Convention, and we were driving out of the delegates party, and it was 7 o'clock and you had to go on, and you broadcasted from the front seat of your car, and I was in the back seat, and I chimed in every now and then.
Well, and you know what? I've gotten to the age where distracted driving is just not going to work for me anymore, you know, and I know I wasn't driving at that point, but yeah, it was fun to do that. And it's fun to have you back on the show because we've known each other a long time. We've both been to many conventions. So that's where we'll start in a minute. But let's first and start with the most important stuff. Your son played in a baseball game in Central Park yesterday, right? Yesterday?
Yeah,
How did they do?
Well, regrettably, they were the runners-up in the championship, and this time they were the runners-up. But it was a great game, and they played two. And I'm pleased to say that he is a product of baseball in the District of Columbia, and he played in college, and now he's playing with a bunch of former college athletes on a team in New York. So I'm a big supporter. I was honored to be his coach, and I was even the commissioner of DC Babe Ruth Baseball.
Well, my son played Little League in DC and loved it. And it was really, really good experience for him as well. What's your son's name, Jim?
It's Joe Bubar.
Okay, well, Joe Bubar, thanks for keeping Washington in the game. We had to give him a shout out. So now let's move on to what you and I did all last week, right? The Democratic Convention. You've been to many conventions, Jim. So give me first, before we really get into the nuts and bolts, give me your impression of the whole thing. What did you think?
Well, I thought it was one of the best conventions I've been to. I think the speeches were incredible. We all have our own favorites. Kamala was clearly the best, but it was sad to say farewell to President Joe Biden. The Obamas were terrific. My favorite, of course, is Bill Clinton, who always informs the Democrats of what we need to do to win. So his walk-up song is this Fleetwood Mac, Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow, because it will soon be here. And it reminds us that our work is just beginning.
It really is. And, you know, we'll get to the polls in a minute because they've done some polls and some important developments have happened since the convention. But at the convention, I agree with you. I think it was really exciting. I think Mrs. Obama was amazing. I agree with her husband. I would never want to speak after her. She was just, you know, she really got the crowd going. I think they did a good job of getting people up there. They had all the Senate candidates, even also Brooks, who's running here in Maryland. And they had good music. They interspersed it because, you know, that's what happens. You have speech after speech after speech, right? And it starts to drag a little bit. And then you get Stevie Wonder and it gets everybody excited, or you get Pink and she gets everybody up and rolling. You know, I unfortunately miss John Legend and one of my heroes, Sheila E., because I play the drums, but, you know, I think they did a good job of that. And basically it's a pep rally and you and I have both been to many. And, but you're right. This is just the beginning. It's just the beginning of getting people out there and doing the hard work, right?
That's right.
And so, I think that, you know, the brightest moment, for me was I agree. Kamala's speech. I thought it was, they did a great job with her great nieces teaching us how to say her name of Kamala. And, you know, they're right. How cute were they, right? La, 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 la.
And, well, we were all wearing these pins, and these, you know, pins showed a comma followed by L-A. Comma La.
Yeah,
was. Everybody at the convention had to learn to say her name properly.
Well, and let me tell you, I meant to mention this to you. You really blew it, Jim, because you left the party the first night. You left the Maryland party to go over to the Navy Pier before I got to sing a solo with the lead singer from the band. So you missed it. But
I'm so sorry. But let me tell you, I thought Chicago did a fantastic job welcoming us, and although I missed your song, I did go to the Navy Pier, and that was spectacular. They really went all out with their fireworks display. There was a little boat that they anchored off of the Navy Pier. They must have shot up like 300 fireworks. And they also had the names of every state displayed on signs around the Navy Pier. And I'm pleased to say that the District of Columbia was recognized on one of the signs because uniquely, the District of Columbia is actually treated like a state, treated as a state, by the Democratic Party. And it's acknowledged everywhere as though it were a state. So for instance, you're a U.S. Senator. But you and our other U.S. Senator, Senator Paul Strauss, are treated as though you are US, real U.S. senators. So you're accorded every privilege that any U.S. senator is accorded when you go to these conventions. And we showed up at the first convention, at the first event, and I was with Senator Strauss, and we got a standing ovation, which was really wonderful. And I think you know, what we're working for is that you and Senator Strauss will be treated as real U.S. senators, not only at the Democratic Convention, but also in the U.S. Congress.
Well, that's great. And that's what we want. And I got to tell you, Jim, you're right. But part of our problem, and this is a big problem for us, is that we don't get treated like United States senators by our own people. When I went to the convention, I had to beg, even though I'm handicapped, to get an extra credential to get in. And I've done DNC credentials. I've given 20 credentials to a senator, and I had to beg for one. And finally, I got credentials through my friends, not through the D.C. State Committee. But when I got to the convention, I got to tell you, Jim, the Secret Service took me. They took me through all the checkpoints. I never had to go through security. They put me in a golf cart. They took me there. The Capitol Police made sure that I got where I was going. Yes, when I was there, the Democratic Party, everybody but my own people, it was ironic, treated me like a regular senator, and I appreciate that. It's very kind. And, yeah, and that's what we're working for. But unfortunately, we get undercut by our own people a lot of times. And that's certainly, certainly unfortunate. But I appreciate the support of people like you, which we've always had. And like I say, the Secret Service and the Capitol Police couldn't have been nicer. They couldn't have been more accommodating, and they couldn't have been better to us. Let's talk about the protesters. I think that was handled pretty well, don't you? I mean, they talked about trouble, 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 and there really was no trouble that I saw anyway. But the protesters were allowed to voice their opinions, and that's the way it should be, right? Especially for the Democrats.
Well, the Democrats have always given protesters an opportunity to say their piece, and that's to the credit of the Democratic Party. The net effect was it slowed down the ability of many of the delegates to get in and out of the convention. And so you had to be a little creative sometimes to get into the convention in order to, you know, get past the demonstrators. But by and large, I think the demonstrators were peaceful. They policed themselves and everything took place, as usual.
And let me say that I personally stand firmly behind Israel and their right to protect themselves. But I also felt that it was appropriate for young people to be out there protesting war. They should always, young people should always do that, right? Because it's old men like me that start this nonsense, and then it's young people like them that have to actually fight it. So I don't begrudge any of the protesters who are out there. And I agree with, even though I don't agree with many of them, I agree with you that it was pretty much peaceful and that they deserve a shout out for doing a good job. And the police were pretty, you know, pretty calm, and handled the situation well. And there were a lot of them there. Make no mistake about it. There always are. But they did I think they did a really good job.
I went to this convention with a specific purpose. I was honored to be elected DC's temporary standing committee representative on the platform committee. And so it was my job to get DC statehood into the platform. And I can tell you that at many conventions that you and I have participated in, we've been on the side of the demonstrators. We've been demonstrating ourselves for DC statehood. And, getting DC statehood into the platform is never a guarantee. There are many competing issues, and it's not something that's easy to do. But in this case, fighting to keep our democracy, I think, is the most important issue of this election. And DC's democracy is part of that. And in this case, President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris know that. And that's why they and this party support DC statehood, and we were able to get it into the platform.
Yeah, that's absolutely the truth. And we both struggle with that on several conventions, haven't we? In Charlotte, I put up billboards to try to get it back in the platform because they took it out. And you've always been there, and we fought side by side more than once to make sure it got into the platform. And thank you for being the guardian of that, because that's really important that we're in the Democratic platform. And you're right. We're supported by Democrats, and we've gotten a bill for DC statehood passed twice through the House. All but three Democrats support us in the Senate, and I would say two and a half Democrats, because I think Joe Manchin is just as much a Republican as he is a Democrat. But the only him and John Tester and Kelly, they're the only three Democrats who are not on our co-sponsors of our bill. So the Democratic Party overall supports this, our right to equality, pretty much across the board. But
I think Tester is on board. I think the only two that were absolutely not in our camp this last time were Cinema from Arizona and Manchin from West Virginia. And both of those are probably not going to be returning to the Senate this next time around. Yeah.
Well, in Cinema is no longer Democrat. She's an independent. And Tester isn't on the bill. We tried to get him on the bill, and he's agreed to be on the bill, but didn't want to do it until after the election because he's got a close election.
Well, Senator King from Maine is also an independent, but we feel he'll be in support of us.
Yes, we actually had a meeting with him, and he told me, Angus King told me personally that he would vote for it. He didn't know whether he'd actually be a co-sponsor, but he said if the bill comes to a vote, he will absolutely vote for it. And that's the same thing in the end, right? That's what we need. But what we need is 60 votes in the Senate, or we need to, I think the more appropriate route is to suspend the rule, get rid of the filibuster for the purposes of passing this legislation. Because, you know, we suspended the rule for some fiduciary stuff, for some budget stuff. But if you can't suspend the rule for the most basic right of citizenship, I mean, it seems to me that that's the most appropriate thing to do, right? Thomas Jefferson said it was the most important, citizen was the most important office in a democracy. So maybe we can get them to do that, because things don't look good in the Senate. You know, they don't look good in the Senate. You're right about Cinema. Tester might not be back. Manchin certainly won't be back. Also, Brooks has got a tough fight. You know Maryland politics a little bit, and Larry Hogan is a tough, tough challenger. He was one of the best liked governors in the history of Maryland, so he's going to be tough. So it's not even likely, I think, at this point, to assume that the Republicans will not be in control of the Senate. They very well may pick up 3 or 4 seats, which will put them in control. Now, in the House, I think it's a different story. I think we're picking up momentum in the House, and I think we may take the House. You know, it's also, you know, too, Jim, that in an election year when one party controls the White House, it's harder for the other party to take control of Congress. No.
Well, it is. And I think in general, the election this time is a heavy lift. But I think we're motivated. I think we have the resources to do it. I think we have the candidates to do it. And with Kamala leading the ticket now, I think we have a pretty good chance of not only getting her elected, but getting the down ballot people elected.
Well, from your lips to God's ear, as they say, let's hope that's the truth. And, you know, you're right. And let me say, before we go any further, what President Biden did, I hope people understand this, is probably the greatest act of sacrifice I've ever seen in politics. The man was our nominee. There was no doubt about it. He had 1,000 more delegates than he needed to get the nomination. And the only way that he could not get the nomination was to step down. And oh, what a difference that's made, right, Jim? What a difference it's made. There was so much enthusiasm, so much energy for Kamala that wasn't there for Joe Biden.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, you like the baseball analogies. So this one, he did a sacrifice hit. He did a sacrifice to advance the party.
Yes.
And, you know, he is now, in my opinion, one of the greatest presidents we've ever had. He not only got us back into NATO, he strengthened NATO, he got the U.S. back into the good graces. He got us through the pandemic. He was dealt a terrible hand with regard to the economy, and he brought us back there. You know, Trump claims to have done all that, but he didn't. And even if the Republicans had simply gone along with what they said they were going to do with immigration reform, we would have solved the border problem as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, Trump called up his friend Mike Johnson and said, you know, you can't pass this bipartisan bill because I need this as an election issue.
It was really not only really cynical, it was just, I think, an abdication of their responsibilities as senators to do the right thing instead of that which they feel is politically expedient. But, yeah, you know, a shout out to Donald Trump as the most valuable player for the Democratic Party these days. I think 70 more days of that man running his mouth is probably the best ammunition we have to motivate people to get out there and do something.
Well, back to your sports analogy again, he's done if this were soccer or football, as they call it in Europe, if this were soccer, he did an own goal.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, he just doesn't get it. And I think it's not bad enough that we've gotten a candidate that everybody's behind, but she's a candidate of color, and he has problems with people of color, and she's a woman. She's a woman, and he has problems with women. You know, going into I was with my daughter, and my aide de camp, Julia, and going to the convention one night, I got in a little bit of a scuffle with a young black man. I just couldn't keep my mouth shut. And Trisha drugged me and she's like, Dad, they're just trying to bait you, which is true, they were. But I saw this young black man with a sign for Trump, and I looked at him and I said, you know, he doesn't like black people. Do you know that? He doesn't like black people. What are you doing? You know, and of course the kid was like, oh, that's untrue. You know, just, you know, who the hell hasn't been drugged into court for housing violations for not, you know, not agreeing to rent to African Americans or been sued or, you know. And can I tell you, I got a vent just here for a minute. I'm a former teacher, Jim. It's the first decent job I had in my life. And, I can't believe that the Teamsters Union is even considering endorsing this man. They will endorse this week, and it's up in the air. And if you're out there listening, Teamsters, don't do it. This man does not hold anything for unions. You know, he doesn't care about unions. So can we talk for a second about the polls? The polls are all over the place. There is a poll that shows that Kamala is up by 7 points nationwide. But there's also a Rasmussen poll that puts Trump up by 4 points. So they're still all over the place, and we still have a lot of work to do. What do you think's going on? You think we got a lift out of the convention?
Oh, I think we totally got a lift out of the convention, and we've gotten a lift for the last month since Joe Biden did the extraordinary step of stepping down and Kamala was put in his place. So we are on a buzz. Everyone's talking about us. But it's, you know, as Bill Clinton says, we got to start thinking about tomorrow, and we've got to work really, really hard, to get there. I think polls are unreliable. I was in Philadelphia working voter protection. The polls were showing that Hillary Clinton was 16 points ahead.
Right.
Well, she wasn't.
Right. Right. They were all on. Right. I remember that the polls all looked good. We're all shocked. We were shocked. I even think Donald Trump was shocked that he won.
Of course he was. You
know, yeah. I mean, it was just something. And voter protection, tell us what you do in voter protection, because I've worked many campaigns and I've seen you guys at work. What do you do?
Well, we have lawyers at every polling place, particularly the polling places where we know that there's going to be issues are going to arise. You can't believe what you see. You see, I've been in south of Philadelphia where we've had 5 precincts reporting into one, and the all white precincts, there's no lines, there's working voting machines, people are going right in. And the predominantly precincts of color, they're long lines, and the voting machines don't work. And they do everything they can to discourage these people from voting. There's a thing in Philadelphia where if you vote for the candidate and then you pull the lever for the party, you invalidate the ballot. And the Republicans have their own team out there, and they were trying to instruct everybody, misleading them into doing that. So we had to counter that, of course, and then we snaked the line so that anybody who was driving by would not notice that there was a really long line, and they would stop and they would come in, and then we would put them in line and we'd feed them and give them water and stuff, which is now illegal in some states.
Yeah.
Can't do that. But that's what we were doing. And then in 2016, there were long lines at, I think it was at Pitt, the university. And so we sent Joe Biden out there to entertain the voters while they were standing in line. So that's kind of what we do. And then there's misleading information that's often put out by the registrars. And we call the registrars and we say to them, cut it out. We're lawyers. We're doing voter protection. You're giving out misleading information. Or they may not have proper ballots. And the paper ballots never arrived at the polling places. Or the signs are misleading. They point to a polling place that doesn't exist anymore. So we run around with our lawyers on the ground, and we correct all that so that eligible voters can get in and vote and where they're legally entitled to do. There's also lots of voter ID issues where we have situations where people just don't have up-to-date ID. They've been divorced or they've changed their address, and their voter IDs don't match their current address or their current name. So we have to sort those out. We had incidents recently where if they're not voting in their states, they're voting elsewhere. And the kids have been told that their scholarships are going to get pulled if they vote in the election. Well, that's not right. We've had to call the registrars of their colleges and sort that out. So voter protection is all about getting people in to vote where they should be. But I can tell you there is another incident that we're worried about this time. And it was reported today in the New York Times, and it was Rachel Maddow, who was saying that in Georgia, they're concerned that they have new election officials in that state. And Trump tried last time to get the governors not to certify slates of delegates to the Electoral College and just ignore the election results. Well, now we're worried about election officials delaying the reporting of results so as to disrupt the Electoral College vote. So Democrats have to be ready for that. We have to have our lawyers ready. We have to be ready to go to court if necessary in order to force the election officials to disgorge the election results so that we can get a proper count and we can get the proper election officials to release those who are supposed to go to the slate so they can go to the Electoral College and vote for the candidate that the voters have selected.
Yeah. And, you know, just since you brought this all up, let me say that we should be thankful that the election officials in Georgia and Arizona last time, who were both Republicans, stood up to the plate and said that the election results were fair and honest. It was an honest election. And so we should shout out to them. They both did a magnificent job. And you know, the thought, Jim, you've worked with people at the polls, and so have I, and the thought that poll workers might do anything that's, you know, not right is just crazy. These people are volunteers, right? They're solid people that are there because they believe in the democratic process. That they are the least likely, you know, I know Trump accused women in Georgia. They're the least likely people to interfere with the election. And, you know, one other thing, this I thought was very creative on the Republican part when you talk about voter protection. I worked on Indian reservations for John Kerry, and Native Americans vote solidly Democratic, but unfortunately they don't vote much. So our job was to get out the vote. And, you know, there's not a Native American in America, really, not many, that don't get some sort of assistance from the federal government. So the Republican Party sent out guys in suits and ties, which is an unusual sight in the reservation anyway, but these guys in like dark suits and ties, and they just walked through the parking lot writing down everybody's tag number. Well, there's nothing illegal about writing down a tag number, right? But obviously they're there to intimidate people and make them think that the government's keeping track of who's voting and who's not. So, yeah. And we had at one reservation I was at, we had a guy arrested, for the things that he was doing. The police came and arrested him. So again, a Republican. So again, for me, people like me and you, for them to talk about voter fraud, right? It really, really seems out of place given the things that we've seen them do at the polls, you know? In New Jersey, when I worked at DNC, they had armed guard at this poll. The Republicans did. And we had to get lawyers like you to go after them. And they actually sued the Republican Party in New Jersey. I don't know. I can't remember what the outcome was. But let's talk about something else that raised its ugly head and is really, really maybe dangerous. And as a lawyer, you may be able to have some insight here. But Kennedy, that, I mean, clearly political opportunist, has now endorsed Donald Trump. His father, who was one of my mentors, one of my idols, I never knew him, but someone I deeply respected, must be rolling over in his grave over this. But he's endorsed Trump, and he's got in five critical swing states, he is either 5 or 6 points in the polls. And that's a lot given this election. Now, I don't know that we can assume that those people will become Trump people, because I think they were with him because they didn't want to be with Trump. So we'll see what happens with that. But, yeah, there's some really key states like Wisconsin, Nevada, like Michigan, where he has got 5 or 6% of the vote at this point in polling. So, what do you think of that?
Well, I've never quite been a fan of his. I didn't like his stance on vaccinations, for instance. Yeah. I think kids need to be vaccinated.
Of course.
Very important component of our and contributes to our national health. So. Frankly, I don't think his endorsement hurts Kamala. I don't think that those people are necessarily going to vote for Trump.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think they are necessarily. I think they, you know, and I don't think, you know, it doesn't say anything about what they, their opinion of Kamala. I think that, you know, there are a lot of young people. My daughter's involved, are loyal Democrats, I'm pretty sure. They're outraged at the Supreme Court decision on abortion of Roe versus Wade, and they'll be out there they're voting. But they weren't particularly fond of the fact that our candidate was old. You know, they're young people, and they thought he was too old. And so, but now they're enthusiastic. Right, because that's been.
Well, I think the biggest risk that we were facing was young people who just weren't going to vote.
Right,
and right. Now they have reason to vote. They have a young, enthusiastic candidate who's very very dynamic, and she's would be the first woman of color to be elected president. So they're part of history now, and I think that contributes to them wanted to come out and vote for her. I like her slogan. I like, she has so many good slogans. But one of the slogans I really like is, "We're not going back."
Right.
So Donald Trump would take us back to a golden age that never was and never would be. And she's saying, no, we're not going back there. We're going forward. And I think that resonates with people. And I think some of, you know, her other quotes about, you know, that we don't talk about it. We just do. If you have a problem, you see a problem with injustice out there, then you do something about it. I think that's a positive message. I think young people need positive messages, as we all do. And she's giving that to us.
I agree. What we're going to do on our show tonight, for the first time in 11 years, Jim Bubar, I hope you appreciate this honor. We've never let a guest pick a song to play us out, but Jim's picked a song today, and it was a good one. I would have picked What About Us, because they did it such a great job at the convention. I think it's such a powerful song. But the song you've picked, and we'll put it on in a few minutes, is really, really says what needs to be said right now. You know, what about all the people? I mean, there was, Just, I hate to be too critical, but there was a little lag in things. Like, I don't think anybody knew who Representative Slotnick was, for example. And John Stewart made a big point out of saying everybody was expecting Beyonce, and they got Representative Slotnick instead.
We got Beyonce. We got her music. We just didn't get her.
Right. But that was the buzz, right? Everybody on the floor was, I remember Trisha looking at her phone going, a couple more speeches, Dad, and then I think maybe we're going to get beyond. Everybody was talking about it. Everybody was talking.
I got a text message from a friend of mine in California that wanted odds on whether Beyonce would show up or not.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry that she didn't, but so many other people did. And so many cool people showed up to the statehood luncheon. Is that not true? Didn't we have a good time at the statehood luncheon?
That was great. So Senator Paul Strauss is tied in with a creative coalition, which is made up of a number of Hollywood actors who believe in causes. And he's gotten them to come over to the statehood cause, and a number of them have given us public service announcements. So that was a pretty dramatic, really fun luncheon that we had. And he even brought in Reverend Jackson, which was quite an honor for us, and a number of other distinguished elected officials from around the country. Josh Shapiro was not there, but he did come and visit Paul's luncheon when we did it in Philadelphia.
He
is with us in spirit. Now, Paul did a really good job. I was glad to be part of it. And I don't know if you remember this, but the mayor Mayor Bowser actually gave me a shout out for my work on getting statehood into the platform. And I'm very grateful to the mayor for doing that.
Well, and you know, the highlight of the whole event, I think, for everybody at the convention was I got hugged by Rosario Dawson. I got hugged by Rosario Dawson, and I said to her, I looked at her. She was so sweet. She took pictures of everybody, and I looked at her, and I said, God, now I can die. And she looked at me, and she said, oh, please don't do that. You know, but she was so sweet.
I was a college fencer. I fenced for 4 years in college, and I was nationally ranked. And I asked her, you know, about her fencing, because she plays Ahsoka in one of the Disney Star Wars series. And so I was asking her about that. So we had a very, really fun discussion.
Well, that's cool. I didn't know that. And you know what I got to tell you, as a national fencer, that I had a friend that went to the Olympics when it was in Spain. And she was told by the U.S. fencing coach to get her children into fencing. And she said, why? And he goes, because they have scholarships at Ivy League schools for this, and nobody's doing it anymore. He said, you know, get them into it. So Kathleen told me, she had two little boys at the time, and she said, oh my God, it was the easiest thing. You know, you give a little boy a sword and just let it, you know, they're so into it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't know if our fencing, our Olympic fencing team is doing any better than it used to, but he said,
we did really well this time. The women did particularly well in foil. They won silver, gold and silver.
Wow, that's great.
Very, that's, very strong now.
Yeah, well, and you know what? I think we did really great at the Olympics overall. It was so much fun to watch. I remember, now my kids, well, this is one of the great things about living in Washington, right? My daughter, Trisha, ends up in the centerfold of Harper's Bazaar magazine with Michelle Obama because Mrs. Obama wanted to have a dance thing at the White House, and she invited some dancers from Broadway, and she invited some amateur dancers from Washington, and Trisha was one of them. So we have a picture, a big picture of her, Mrs. Obama, and Trisha right in front of Mrs. Obama doing the splits as a teenager. And, you know, that was just that was just great. And my daughter Mary swam at the same pool that Katie Ledecky swam at.
We belong to
it's on Seven Lost Road, and all our kids belong to the same pool. Now Mary, we're proud to say, got a 13th place ribbon in a race. I said to her mother, there were 13 kids in the race. And her mother said, no, there were actually 14, but only one of them made it halfway across. One of them made it only halfway across the pool. So Mary came in 13th. So unfortunately, Katie was driving herself off and in the car and driving home before Mary got to the end of the race. But I mean, that's the kind of things your kids can get exposed to here in Washington. It's just a wonderful, wonderful place to live. And guess what, y'all? We ought to have the same damn rights as everybody else. And that's what we're going to move on to right now, because Jim is co-chair of the Statehood Committee's Committee on D.C. Statehood. So tell me about that, Jim. You and Andrea Thomas, who ran against me. I got to tell you something, Jim. I've run against many people for this office. I've been elected 3 times. But Andrea is the only one who got defeated and continued to work for statehood. None of the other people I've ever run against have ever done anything. They all talk about statehood until the election's over. But Andrea is the only one who's actually stepped up to the plate. And she's your co-host, your co-chair. So tell me what you guys are doing.
Well, let me say that I would have been very sad if she had defeated you. But I'm really delighted that I've been able to work with her.
Yeah, me too.
So it was kind of a silver lining. So yeah, she's not our U.S. Senator, but I get to work with her. And she is a tremendous asset to the party and to the statehood movement. And what I like about her is she's very action-oriented. We spend our monthly meetings talking about and trying to figure out what we can do next. And so we've been very successful in working with Noah Wills, for instance, and having state legislatures around the country hear statehood resolutions. And I think we passed 21 states, although it's been presented to more than 2/3, almost 3/4 of the states, which is a great way to raise visibility. We've also been able to get endorsements on the statehood pledge from elected officials and candidates who are running from office at the state and local level around the country. The congressmen, of course, have all endorsed the statehood bills in Congress, which passed the Congress twice. And as we said, 48 senators have endorsed statehood in the Senate. But this is a way to institutionalize statehood in the Democratic Party, so that it becomes a no-brainer. That is, everybody wants D.C. statehood because it's a fundamental inequity that 700,000 Americans would be treated unequally, differently than all other Americans in this country. They serve in the same wars, but they don't have a vote for the person to go into the war. We pay taxes like all other Americans, but we don't have representation in Congress. And in fact, we pay more taxes per capita than any other state. So it's just fundamentally not a fair thing that the District of Columbia residents don't have a representative, a voting representative in Congress, and statehood will cure all of that. But I do want to talk about one thing. So in terms of next steps and what we're going to do next steps. So I talked about voter protection. I'm doing voter protection, but our party has a blue wave committee, and there's both a blue wave committee within the party and a blue wave committee that works adjacent to the party. And we're going to be sending money and volunteers to Pennsylvania, to North Carolina, and Virginia in critical races, both to canvass and help with get out the vote. So if you're interested in doing that, please let us know. We'll put you in car caravans going up there in on a weekly basis. And then you can feel like you're really part of the campaign and you are helping by joining us to canvass and help with GOTV. In addition, the statehood party, we have a thing that we do, which is called No Donation Without Representation. When you are making a campaign contribution, look on the list that we have and see whether the candidate that you're contributing to has signed the statehood pledge. And if they haven't, ask them to do it. And when you send money to those people, make sure you end your contribution with $51. So they know when they get a contribution for $251, they'll ask you, why did you make it for $251 instead of $250 or instead of $200? It's because you want them to recognize that you support DC statehood. Now, at the statehood luncheon that Paul Strauss gave, the mayor made an ask. She asked that each of us, each Democrat, send $51 to the Kamala Waltz campaign and to show our support for DC statehood, sending $51 to the Kamala Waltz campaign. So I'm asking you to do that, and please don't wait. Do it soon. And finally, our statehood committee is having its monthly meeting this Wednesday, August 28th, to recap the convention. You'll be hearing a lot of the same stuff that Michael and I are talking about now. But Senator Brown, I hope that you will join us on the call.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? You've done great work. And I don't think this is a big secret, but I took Andrea to lunch and asked her to run for my seat when I decided not to run. And she wouldn't because of her job, and I understand that. It's a very strange position. You know, I had a PR firm, which I closed down after 3 years of political PR firm. I got wealthy doing this, and I decided that I would work for free. For the last 15 years, I haven't had a paycheck, and I haven't needed a paycheck, so it was great. But it's hard to do business as a senator. You know what I mean? People are very wary of that because they don't know exactly how that works. You know, do you really want to, you know? So I understand that. But, yeah, and you guys are doing a great job. And you're right. Everybody should send $51. That would be great. I think that our chances improve with Kamala being elected, if she gets elected, which I hope she does, because she's not only somebody that supported the statehood bill, and she's one of those people that co-signed it immediately. You know, she didn't have to be talked into it. And she's also a Howard University Law School graduate, so we kind of consider her a favorite daughter here in Washington, D.C. She spent a lot of her life here, and she believes in the cause. And, you know, as you know, Jim, support has been increasing because of the kind of things that we're all doing, right? And Barack Obama said, "I'm for it." Joe Biden actually issued a letter from the White House in support of DC statehood. So, and I think Kamala will do even more, give us more support from the White House. So we know that no other country in the world does this, no other democracy in the world does this, and that its days are numbered. It's not a, it's no longer a matter of if the District of Columbia becomes a state. It's more a matter of when the District of Columbia becomes a state. And as far as what Noah Wills is doing, let me tell you, he is really doing something that's creative, and it's important, because one of the first hearings I went to on D.C. Voting Rights Act, Claire McCaskill, senator at the time, said that she voted for it because she remembers the constitutional amendment that we passed. And when she was a state legislator, she voted to give the District of Columbia two senators. And so that's what you got to do. You got to get them, even the guys that don't get elected, right? Because the candidates, because maybe they won't get elected this time, but they'll get elected next time. That very often happens. So shout out to Noah. Noah, by the way, you talk about these resolutions. I went to Nebraska, Jim, and I testified on behalf of one of the resolutions. I did this about 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago. And it was just an amazing. It was before the Veterans Committee. And so I show up a half an hour early because I'm out there. That's the only thing I'm out there to do, right? I have nothing else to do. So the room is full of veterans. They're going to give a veterans, they're going to deal with some kind of veterans legislation after, after they consider our legislation. So I talked to every veteran. I introduced myself, and I come from a military family. So I thank them all for their service and, you know, talk to them. And then I sit down, and three mean looking Republicans come and sit in front of me, ready to ask me embarrassing questions about the District of Columbia, about crime and guns and other stuff. And the first thing I say is, there's 40,000 veterans in the District of Columbia who do not have the same rights as every other American. And there's such a moan from the audience, from the 50 people that are sitting behind me, that two of the Republicans stand up and leave. They don't even ask a question. They just stand up and leave, you know. So it's always, you know, my dear old comrade daddy used to say, better to be lucky than good. And so, I think that every time from now on, if I ever get to testify again, I will bring a group of veterans with me. But we're running out of time here, Jim. And we're going to have to play your song. So tell me what you think. Is there one last thing you want to say, or you want to put your website out there or anything?
Well, I do want to thank some people. I do want to thank some people in Chicago that were really nice to us.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank our own Sean Tenner, who put together a terrific welcome party. And he invited the owners of Ben's Chili Bowl, Virginia and Vida Alley, to come, and he introduced the owner of Mumbo Sauce that Jesse Jackson brought to Washington, D.C. from Chicago. So I wanted to thank him. I also wanted to thank Charles Wilson and Linda Gray for leading our delegation, and Anita Bonds for being the great resource that she is and helping us get through the convention. And of course, you for doing all the work that you've done over the years, and now for statehood and for the sacrifices that you've made in your position as U.S. Senator. Because I think you've done a wonderful job.
Well, thank you, Jim. That's very kind of you to say. And yeah, let me give a shout out to a few people that helped me. Helen Milby, who runs Global Win, and a couple other groups, and they were very helpful for us when we were in Chicago. My daughter Trisha, who came with me everywhere and was to make sure that I didn't fall down too much and help me out. And also, I was lucky to bring my intern Julia Paula with me. She just amazed me at every turn. We go to an event, Jim, and we start talking to the French consulate, and she speaks to the woman in perfect French. Then they call Franklin Garcia, who you know, called me up and asked me to do a show, a TV show, from the convention in the Dominican Republic. I don't speak any Spanish. They didn't speak a word of English. Julia translated the whole show perfectly for me in Spanish. She also speaks Portuguese and English because she's Brazilian. So shout out to her for keeping the old man from falling down, and to Tricia and to Helen and to Jeanette Mobley, who was our floor person who whipped everybody into shape, the Democratic whip for DC, who took an interest.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Jeanette is great.
He was great. So we're going to leave you now because we're out of time, and we're going to play Jim's song, which just happened to be Bill Clinton's campaign song, and it's absolutely, positively what needs to be done. We cannot stop thinking about tomorrow. It's only 70 days away. Let's get it done. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Come back next week. And by the way, my little podcast, Shadow Politics, is up for a People's Choice Award. So we're so proud of that. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for nominating us. And we'll see you next week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.